ABC Radio Australia.
Now, after 4 days of tense negotiations in Paris, French President Emmanuel Macron has signed a new agreement with New Caledonian political groups. The Élysée-Oudinot Accord gives greater clarification to the previous Bougival agreement, one that pro-independence group FLNKS rejected, and despite a last-minute request to attend the meeting, was declined. Now, what does this new agreement mean for the French territory? Well, someone who has been a long-time political observer of this is Australia's former Consul General to New Caledonia, Denise Fisher. With that, I say, bonjour, Denise, ça va?
Ah oui, ça va. Salut, Aggie.
Thank you for joining us this morning. Well, look, in simple terms, Denise, what does this new Élysée-Oudinot Accord actually change for New Caledonia?
I would like to be sitting here telling you that it's going to change things for the better, but I have to say that aspects of it and around it are deeply concerning, profoundly concerning, I think, for New Caledonia. On the one hand, there's been a huge effort by the French state. I don't think anyone could dispute that. They've pulled these people together in Paris and they've come up with this agreement and an attachment, an economic attachment, where they're pledging vast amounts of money and support for New Caledonia, and that's all that's positive. But in terms of the agreement itself, the political agreement, there are difficulties. You mentioned that the FLNKS was not present at the meeting. Mm. The FLNKS decided not to participate, and then a couple of days before the meeting, they asked if they could be represented by video conference, because their position all along has been that negotiations should take place in Nouméa, in New Caledonia, not in France. But the French declined to allow a video conference. I think it's before we look at the agreement itself, it's worth thinking about why did they have this meeting and what is this extra agreement all about. You'll recall that in July there was this Bougival agreement plan for New Caledonia, a new form of sovereignty within France, signed on by all the parties. But within a month, of course, the FLNKS pulled out of that. And by the end of the year, even moderate indigenous, the other indigenous grouping, the UNI, pulled out, which had been not pulled out, had asked for clarifications, significant clarifications. And even a moderate loyalist group was asking for further clarifications. So support was falling away by the end of the year. Meanwhile, the pro-France groups were seeking to deepen relationships with France, because they'd signed on to this agreement. So the French government, again, it says it's a valiant effort, because they themselves are very shaky in Paris. There's a real position of the government itself is fairly embattled, but it took the time. Mr. Macron himself personally opened this meeting, which was not participated in by the FLNKS. Yeah. So there was all of this surrounding the meeting, and even over the 4 days, two other leaders left the meeting. Now, we're not sure why, and their signatures are not on the agreement. This is Philippe Gomez, who's the head of one of the moderate loyalist groups, and the head of the small party, which has been decisive in votes in the local Congress, the Éveil Océanien. So one has to question why, you know, what that means. What is that going to mean? But to now look at the agreement itself, it's true that they do address some of the key issues on which many of the parties wanted clarification. The first one was concerns that there wasn't enough attention in the Bougival Accord to acknowledging and respecting Kanak identity, recognising the Kanak identity. And it has done this, but of course it's the product of compromise, and it's done it within the context of talking about the plural identities of the Caledonian people. So it's couched it more in terms of numerous communities in New Caledonia. The second thing that it addresses is the acquisition of full sovereign powers, for which there is a process under the Bougival Accord. And again, by elaborating on it, you know, there's some senses in international in treaties being ambiguous, because then you get a lot of support. But in elaborating on it, it creates new difficulties, because it reaffirms, of course, that every step along the way, France, it is all within France, and France will have the veto power. And the third area that addresses is strengthening the power of the provinces, even to the point of them being able to impose taxes. This is something that the pro-France parties have wanted for 10 years. It is very surprising because it directly goes against the Namur Accord provisions for no partitioning of New Caledonia. Mm. And what we're talking about is a small archipelago. Two provinces are poor and predominantly Kanak, and the main southern province is mainly European and is very wealthy. So what does this mean for the unity of New Caledonia for the future? Mm. Then it sets out a timetable, and we are talking now about a vote on independence in June, another referendum in June. I call it an independence vote because, ironically, the agreement itself says that the three referendums that we've already had were divisive because they were binary. But then it goes to schedule a referendum in June, which will be for or against the Bougival Accord, which means effectively for or against staying with France. This is, whether it's possible to even have it by June is another question, but that, you know, is a very sensitive issue. Mm. And then the final thing I'd like to mention about the accord is that it postpones local elections. They have already been postponed three times. It's now going to be postponed till the end of the year, which raises questions about the political legitimacy of the people who went to Paris. They're already overdue on their voted mandate. What is the status of these people? What legitimacy do they have? Mm. And until there's a local election, we can't answer that question. So for all of those reasons, I think the agreement itself, in my mind, raises very serious questions, but none more serious than the absence and now the rejection of FLNKS. We've now seen it didn't take them long. Within a day, there's a scathing communique that they've issued, calling it a pseudo-agreement, a charade, talking about economic blackmail. It's a scathing indictment, and it's their long-held position. They review their long-held positions, but it raises real concerns when you look at the 2024 violence about what is ahead for New Caledonia if the FLNKS remains on the outside of negotiations.
Mm. Goodness, you've unpacked a lot there already, Denise. And when we look at FLNKS, though, you know, knowing that they rejected the original Bougival Accord, wanting things to happen in New Caledonia, I'm wondering, though, if they had attended the meeting, would this really have changed the outcome in some sense? Because knowing that also, you said there were two others that didn't end up signing the agreement.
Of the two others, their party representatives signed, but the leaders themselves have presented themselves. And that raises questions in my mind. It may be very good reasons, but the reasons are not evident. I think the absence of the FLNKS was significant because I can't answer that question. What would have happened if they were present? Mm. What I do know, what history tells us very firmly, is that, you know, in the late 70s, there were 12 statutes the French put forward. 12. They call it the waltz of the statutes. And all of them were rejected because this core Kanak party, this same party, the Union Caledonienne, was not supportive of it and was not included. So history tells us that no durable solution can be found for New Caledonia without the inclusion of all the major parties, and especially the parties that represent Indigenous Kanak people. So for that reason, I think it's disturbing. The overseas minister for France, when she spoke at the meeting, said it's an achievement in itself that we're all here. Well, my question when I heard that, I know that she's done a lot of work and very positive work on this, but they weren't all present. The FLNKS were not present. So I don't know how we go forward from here. Mm. I think the portent is ominous, I have to say.
Denise, I mean, when we look at everything, the overall picture, I think you mentioned earlier in one of your answers, I mean, does this mean, you know, for Paris, that they will ultimately really have final say on key decisions or issues for New Caledonia? Is that the case?
Absolutely. Yeah. Within the Bougival Accord, it is a solution which is imaginative and innovative. It is certainly within the three options that the United Nations gives for a solution to decolonization, which is to stay within the sovereign power. And it is, that's what it is. It's a solution of France devolving sovereignty, even the most profound sovereign powers. There is a mechanism for this, but within France. Yes, that is very clear. And if anything, this addition has made that even more clear.
I think what's become even more clear is, you know, the Pacific is watching closely on the situation. So I'm wondering what message does it then send about decolonization in the region?
Well, it's a very good question. And when you examine the FLNKS communique, it is very carefully prepared. When I say it was very quickly responded to, this is not an off the top of reaction. This is a very considered communique and is worthy of very close study. And they do talk about the decolonization principles of the United Nations. And in fact, the trend of the FLNKS position in the last 6 months has been to rely more and more on international solutions and the United Nations role. The annual resolution on New Caledonia, which Pacific Island countries supported way back in 1986 when they moved for the relisting of New Caledonia as a non-self-governing country, territory. Every year there is a resolution on New Caledonia, and the last one was in December, on the 8th of December, and it calls for respect for the self-determination of the people of New Caledonia. So those processes, I think, will be fully used, as they have been in the past, by the FLNKS to advance their position. I'd say we could see a renewal of those efforts. But the other thing that we need to consider too is this whole timetable, which Paris has very carefully laid out, this timetable. And it involves constitutional amendments. So this is a huge commitment by Mr. Macron's government. I do feel that we are seeing it from our Pacific angle, and that's the important angle. We are in the Pacific. But from a European angle and the European requirements, it's incredible that this major country, France, is changing its constitution yet again to accommodate, to try and keep New Caledonia, to give it further powers, but within the Republic. And to do this, they need to change the constitution. They need to have it passed by the National Assembly, then by the Senate, and then for both members, both houses to join, and they get 3/5 of that vote. Now, my question is this possible? We know that Mr. Lecornu's government is embattled. There's a hung parliament. He has just had to resort to force measures for the budget. He's using Article 43.9. He could not get agreement to a vote on the budget, to support for his budget. So he's having now to have recourse to a special measure, which effectively forces through the national budget. And he's facing a no confidence motion on Monday. And yet at the same time, there is this complex web of calendar events for New Caledonia involving both houses of parliament. I'm worried that some of the qualifications, you know, the absence of a couple of these members over the weekend and the rejection of the FLNKS, how will that play in getting support in the National Assembly? The predominant pressure on Macron's government is from the ultra-right, so it's unlikely they will want to amend it so that it strengthens rather than gives more autonomy to New Caledonia. It strengthens more the power of France. So that's all just one step in the process before we can go ahead with the referendum in June. And then we've got to have organic laws and other legal requirements for New Caledonia to take on their own powers under the organic law, under the Bougival Accord, leading to provincial elections by the end of the year. So there's a whole complex of things that has to happen. And at each step, there are major hurdles, not just in New Caledonia, where there is controversy every step of the way, but in Paris, where there are major impediments to the government legislating at all.
Yeah, from what you've said, Denise, you know, I want to take it back to the time. You know, you've served on the ground, right, as Australia's Consul General in Noumea. Does this, when you look back and then you look at what's happening now, does this agreement considering maybe it being held up against even the new Mayor Accord that was initially brought around, is it a breakthrough or is it just another holding agreement?
I don't think it's a breakthrough at all. In fact, I'm, as I've mentioned, these numerous statutes that were put forward in the late 70s, that's what it brings to mind. I'm sorry to say that. I'm very sorry to say that. It brings to mind progressive efforts by France to put forward things which were basically helping it to maintain control while trying to get local support. And in every step they failed, ultimately leading to the boycott of a referendum in 1987 by Indigenous Kanak people, eerily resonating of in the third referendum that has set off this huge impasse. What we saw and what the Kanak, the FLNKS communique reiterates is that they will never accept the results of that failed third referendum. And they see this Bougival Accord as yet another attempt to impose something on the people who support them. The other thing to bear in mind is that they are not a small group. You know, as I say, they've got two of the national parliamentarian positions that go to New Caledonia. The FLNKS have two of those four. They have 24 local seats in New Caledonia. They are not a small entity. They are the core element of the independence movement and of the representatives of the Indigenous people. So it's not, it's very tempting in a democracy. You say, well, you know, five out of the seven groups went to Paris, five out of seven, you know, or 75% support this. But in New Caledonia, history shows us that only when you get things like the Matignon-Oudinot Accords in 1988 and the Namur Accord of 1998, both of which were consensus involving all political parties. Only when you have that do you have something that can last. And at the moment, we are falling short of that. It's not to say that there's no way forward. There may well be a way forward, and I think all of us would want the way forward to be through further dialogue and engagement and discussion and inclusion. But I see that as becoming very increasingly more difficult because, you know, you look on the social media networks and the venom and the contempt that you now see in the discourse is something that is only reminiscent when I was a very young diplomat in the 1980s of those very bad 4 years of disturbances and violence. So I hope that that we can make some circuit breaker, but this agreement is not it. Further effort must be made, and I know it's painful to say that, and it must be painful for France to hear that and for the other parties, the loyalist parties of Caledonians who've been in New Caledonia for generations. I know it's painful for them to hear it, but it's not enough. There still needs to be more effort in all of this. And I like the rest of the region, I think we all hope that somehow these forces can bring it, find it within themselves to come together and to agree on something more long-lasting.
Denise, look, that's all the time that we have for this morning. And I do know there's probably quite a few milestones that need to happen right before we see anything sort of come to fruition. But again, as always, want to say merci beaucoup for your time this morning.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
That is Australia's former Consul General to New Caledonia, Denise Fisher.